by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
And we are rocking and rolling on Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. And, you know, we do talk a lot about aquatic invasive species with Wyoming Game and Fish Department. And it's important that people are very alert and aware of what happens if these aquatic invasive species come into our waterways. And Janet Millick is with us today. And Janet, I know that we maybe people think that we harp on it too much, but it's such an important topic that anytime we can bring it up, and especially when we have a good story to go right along with it.
Absolutely, Drew. And we do harp on it a lot. But one of the things that I'm here today to say is thank you to everyone out there who actually listens. And we had a local Casper resident who must have paid attention at some point, because he just saved the entire North Platte River drainage from a positive zebra mussel confirmation. And we are so thankful to him for everything that he has done for Wyoming's fisheries, Wyoming's aquatic ecosystems, Wyoming's waters, and every Wyoming water user, because he just did an incredible selfless act that easily could have ended in disaster.
So Eric Hansen is with us today, and Eric, you're our boots on the ground. You're the guy that's out. You're anytime something big like this comes up, you're the guy that they call, because they need the best of the best to get in to take care of situations like this.
And, you know, I just have to interrupt really quick, Drew, when you say it's his boots on the ground. I think the last 5, 6, 7 days, it's been hands and knees on the ground, because that's where he has been to kind of deal with this situation.
So let's kind of start from the beginning of the situation. We talk about everybody's always aware that maybe their boat motor or their boat could have an AIS, could have an aquatic invasive species, but it doesn't stop there, does it, Eric?
No, and this is a perfect example of that. And for some reason here in Casper, it seems like I always get the kind of out there left of field examples of these things. So while we do, you know, our program is educational at its core, and that's what we're trying to teach people, is to clean, drain, and dry, and, you know, specifically watercraft, yes, but really anything that's a conveyance that can go into the water is something that we want to take a look at and inspect. And, you know, this is an example of that. And it could be something as easy as a piece of dock that, you know, folks aren't thinking about.
So in this situation, that's exactly what happened, is someone from Casper ended up going out of state and picking up an actual dock, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's pretty common this time of year. We see a lot of people head east to get boats and boat equipment. I mean, Wyoming just doesn't have the amount of boaters that it takes to have a lot of that infrastructure in place for those folks to get those pieces. So yes, they do travel out of state a lot of times to get those. And so this is that time of year where really, if you're going out of state to grab anything that's going in the water, it's definitely great to get a hold of us and, you know, let us know so we can take a closer look at that and make sure nothing's getting transported.
Well, and this dock particularly came from Iowa by way of South Dakota, which we all know that South Dakota is one of the states really close by that has had an issue with AIS over the last few years.
Yeah, and so specifically this lift had been housed on Lewis and Clark Lake, which is, you know, right there on the Missouri River, Nebraska-South Dakota border. And from what I see, they grow some pretty nice sized zebra mussels down there.
Very, very, so, and abundant, right? Yes, like yes, there's not just one or two.
Yep, it's definitely an abundant life cycle down there, and they're doing well. So it's unfortunate to see, but also something that, you know, should give us pause that, you know, we're not that far off from that sort of climate that we could be housing these things and really having these same issues.
So when the dock gets back to Casper, it's sitting there on the street getting ready to go to Alcova, where it'll be plunged in the water and secured. But then something seemed a little off.
Exactly. you know, we like to remind folks that, you know, zebra and quagga mussels are the only freshwater mussel, or really the only freshwater bivalve at all, that can attach to a surface. So if you have something that is coming from an inland lake that has something attached to it that is, you're, even if you're not familiar with it, there's a high chance that that's what it is. So, you know, we get stuff even coming from the ocean and it has barnacles on it. Obviously, we're not concerned about a saltwater species being introduced, and, you know, there's a lot less risk there. But, you know, if you're coming from brackish waters, you're coming from inland lakes, estuary type places, and you have attached things on anything that's been in the water, there's a good chance that's what it is. And we need to take a look at it and deal with it.
And that is exactly what happened. Is it was parked on the side of the street there, and said purchaser said, well, these things are, I mean, if you saw the pictures, and you can certainly look online for some of them, it is unreal. Saw all of these bivalves attached and said, ring, ring, Eric, I think we have a situation here that we need to deal with. And shortly thereafter, Eric and his crew were picking up mussels, first of all, off of the street, because the last thing we want to happen there is for any rain to wash any of these mussels into the sewage system of Casper, or any birds to pick it up and fly over the North Platte River. And so they were picking up every single mussel that they could before they brought it to their containment unit here at the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, Casper Regional Office, to start the decon process that has been a minimum of 8 hours a day for the last 5 days. And I mean, shovel full after shovel full after shovel full of live. And I think that that's the kicker here, is these things weren't left out to dry in Iowa before they were sold and brought here. These things were alive and attached to this boat lift. And so they've had a fun time removing them all week.
So the gentleman that purchased the boat dock lift got it right out of the water and brought it right back to here?
You know, I guess I don't know that story perfectly, but the dealership did, yes. It was okay. None of this gentleman's fault at all, which, you know, again, we're super thankful that he reached out, and do want to say thanks to him for his cooperation. And there is no illegal activity on his part. But yes, this dealership absolutely did that. And of course, when you're in the throes of an infestation place, right, an area that has all of these mussels, you probably don't think about it as much as we do here in a place like Casper, where we don't have that, right? Everything that man removes, or that dealership removes from the water, is probably encrusted like that. No big deal. Oh, this guy from Wyoming wants it. Great. Hey, we'll pull this out. We'll get it on the trailer and we'll send it home with you. And so while we're investigating that aspect of it, we're just thankful for the Wyoming resident here to help us prevent that situation in Wyoming.
So Eric, she mentioned that it's been at least 8 hours a day for the contamination process. What are you doing during this 8 hours? Like, what is your process to remove them and really destroy them? Because you don't want anything to slip through the crack.
Yeah, and that's a great question, Drew. You know, this is really something we don't see a lot of in Wyoming when it comes to mussel encrusted anything, boats, docks, whatever. You know, we have come across it a few times over the years where we have to do what's called a full decontamination. And so when a watercraft or a conveyance comes from an infested water, you know, there's years upon years of growth of mussels on these. So for instance, on the boat lift, there's about 3 inches of encrusted mussels just on the bottom alone. You know, so they grow on top of each other. As they die, they just continue almost like a living mat to cover that entire surface. So it starts with a bulk removal where, you know, we're just taking whatever we can, hand scrapers, putty knives, things like that, to get all of the visible adults off that we can do. We then submerge those into hot water, essentially. So we have horse troughs that we're using that, you know, we fill with 140 plus degree water. And then we put those through a couple baths of that. That's when the smell starts to kick in because they start to cook and open up, and then the flies come in. So that's fun. And after that, it's going back. It's a lot of cleanup in between because, you know, we're working on a containment mat that's filling up with dirt and silt and everything else that these release as they die. So it's a lot of in between cleaning, then going back to the spot that we took the bulk off of and really getting in there to get the Bissell threads. So what they use to attach to a surface is a secreted enzyme that, well, it kind of works like super glue for them. Yeah. So we're essentially just scraping all that glue off. And then after that, we'll go back in and pressure wash all those surfaces to get all the fine fibers and things like that off. So,
and you know, Drew, as he talks about this and we talk about scraping this stuff off, right? In my mind, and the fantastic work that I've seen them doing, is you just kind of have this big thing and it's kind of fun. You can scrape off and see, you know, the removal, and it seems very easy. But then you look over and there's a hollow pipe attached, I should say hundreds of hollow pipes attached all over this dock. And you look down the pipe and it is completely encrusted with these all the way down, this 12-foot pipe. And these guys have to figure out, okay, how are we going to get every single viable mussel out of this pipe? And so, you know, they're trying to craft these tools. They're trying to think through and flush and do all of this stuff. It is absolutely mind-boggling if you come and watch. And if you see the size of some of these, you know, a grain of sand for some of these that are attached, that are still alive, that these guys are removing. It is unreal.
And just as an example, you had mentioned a 12-foot pipe, almost all fully encrusted. Mm-hmm. Imagine that being a water pipe that is going through our water system. That is exactly what we're trying to avoid happening, because that is exactly what will happen if we become infested with that.
Absolutely. And, you know, while we here at the Game and Fish Department are super happy to assist in this decon, think of the hours and the manpower that have gone into helping this one individual. And I guarantee you that if those get into our water system, many people will not be as happy to do this for free. And so we will all be paying the price at that point. And that's where we talk about the cost of water treatment going up, the cost of sewage going up. And so that's the big thing that does happen, right? Is in order to keep these things clean, you have to have more people to do more of the cleaning and the jobs and the everything. So it's not just recreationists or fishermen that would be impacted by an infested water. It is all of us in Wyoming, and we would all be paying, once again, increased prices, unfortunately. And that wouldn't be coming from us. You know, that would be coming from electrical companies, from water companies, from municipalities, in order to continue to provide the services that at the level that we have come to expect.
So, Eric, real quick, let's talk. If this boat lift would have gotten into Alcova, how quickly would it have become a major issue?
This time of year, it would have become a major issue probably pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It's the right time of year, the right water temperatures where these start to spawn. So, you know, if even just a couple dozen of them survived and made it through the trip, you know, through all the sitting out in the sun and then getting put in the water, it would only take a couple of those to spawn to cause an issue. A single female can lay up to 1 million eggs a year. And with the water temperatures what they are, you know, they could start spawning right off the bat, and we would probably see a full infestation pretty quickly after that.
And so how the AIS system works, a lot of, you know, since the things that they're looking for are underwater, and most of our folks are not scuba divers, we do sampling. And we do that in the spring and we do that again in the fall. And so we collect water samples, we do plankton toes, which collects a lot of the debris that allows us to test for the DNA and so forth of these creatures. And so it would be detected probably pretty quickly as we do this early spring aquatic invasive species plankton toe detection. And so those are some things that we have in place to look for them. We would probably not visually see them or be able to tackle any type of remediation, which there isn't once they're in there. So I don't want to put that out there that like, oh yeah, we just solved this problem immediately. But that testing, we would probably know within a month or two, or definitely by the end of the summer, that the water was positive, which I also want to remind folks, the water flows downhill. And so every water that is on the North Platte River, including the North Platte River, that flows all the way to Nebraska from Alcova would have been positive. And any of the boats that would have traveled between Alcova and Pathfinder, Seminole, any of those places would have been carrying little bits of water that have those positive larvae in it, right, that can survive, dropping it off at Pathfinder the next night. So that is the importance of the drain, clean, dry that we continually harp on.
Well, Eric, as the summer goes on, I know that it's becoming more and more important. A lot of boats have come in from Nebraska and from South Dakota and from Colorado. So making sure that everyone that comes across the border stops, gets checked, make sure that they have that receipt and, anything you can do to help out the process.
Exactly, Drew. And it's one of those things, where unfortunately it's kind of a rapidly changing, we seem to get something thrown at us, a different curveball every year. So it's really one of those topics that, if you do use the water, you kind of want to keep up on, make sure that you're following regulations. If you're coming in from out of state, if you're passing an open check station, really understanding what it is to be a boater in Wyoming and how that works and, clean, drain, and dry your own craft. And if you're not traveling out of state and you don't pass us, know that you're still good to launch in Wyoming and that, you can still feel safe for now that, our waters aren't harboring these.
And again, Drew, a huge thanks to the resident and all of Wyoming's residents for their continued cooperation. We couldn't do it without them. And we really appreciate all the smiles that we get to see as they come through the check stations.
Yeah, I much rather would have found out from someone giving me a call, hey, we need some help dealing with this, than pulling up plankton toes from the marina this summer and getting that news. So
it's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's that time of year where there is something going on every weekend. And one thing that I want to point out and let you start planning now is Kids Fishing Day and Free Fishing Day in Casper. Janet Millick is with us from Game and Fish. And Janet, I know that it's a big time for the whole state of Wyoming, but it's also huge for the city of Casper.
That's right. Free Fishing Day is celebrated all across Wyoming, and it's an opportunity for anyone who does not have a fishing license to fish without a license. So all rules and regulations as far as harvest numbers, etc., do apply. But unless you're fishing the Wind River Reservation or Yellowstone National Park, you are good to go.
So we have a couple of great gentlemen from the city of Casper, Billy McCain and Chad Green. You guys have really been working hard getting this ready, and I know it's going to be June 7th, and that's a big day for the kids of Casper, right?
Absolutely. It'll be a lot of fun.
So what's going to kind of be the rundown, Chad? I know that we kind of got events that are going to go and things are going to happen all day.
Okay, so we're teeing things up Saturday, June 7th from 9 to 1, Yesness Pond. This is we have an annual Kids Fishing Day, but this one is off the charts, okay? Wild Gear came in, the North Platte Walleye Unlimited Club's here, giving out free fishing poles to the kids. Me and Billy do a lot of the logistics, putting bags together, getting sponsorships. So, yeah, we tee things up at, 5 in the morning. We have to get, parking lot personnel there just to get, all of our ducks in a row. And then right after that, the kids can come show up. They register. with Janet and the Wyoming Fish and Game team, and we just kind of kick things off from there.
So what you're saying is the early fish gets the worm.
We don't want to say that. We're there from 9 until 1, and so it is a fantastic time. And like these gentlemen said, we have worked really hard this year to come up with some fantastic sponsors. And so Wild Gear will be there with wonderful coolers that there's a drawing for. And so, you know, I guess the early bird might get that worm, but it is a fantastic day to come out and do some great fishing and experience what our community fisheries in Wyoming has to offer. And just in case people don't know, there are a couple here in town. There is the Yesness Pond as well as Bryan's Dock Trail, also known as Lake McKenzie, which currently holds a state record for the largest fish. So these community fisheries are not just play. And so it is a fantastic day to come and celebrate with our sponsors and enjoy a day out.
Billy, what's the best way for people to get more information? And, you know, if they want to register, how do they do that?
So a lot of our information we're going to be having on Facebook, on our website. There's going to be a press release later here soon. Like Janet said, the event starts at 9 o'clock and they register the day of.
Very good. It's going to be a great day. June 7th, free fishing day in all of Wyoming and kids fishing day at Yesness. You want to make sure you get there. We'll have more information for you in the My Country 95.5 app.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where we just wrapped up the Wyoming Walleye Stampede a couple of weekends ago, about ready for the next round at Glendoe. And I think there may be a pretty good comparison between the two, because we had weather that you normally have the mid-June in early May.
Yeah, it's the weather always plays a part on fish patterns, what they're doing, where they're at, and all that kind of stuff. And it looks like this next weekend, unlike this weekend, you know, is going to be in the upper 80s. And right now it's calling for just a small percentage of rain. So, and it was pretty warm on the last one.
It was. You know, that's the first heat we really have felt in the last 6 months or so, and boy, it really hurt.
Yeah, it did hurt a little bit. But yeah, I think, you know, we're looking forward to a good weekend. You know, the fishing it's kind of been up and down. It seems like more of the guys that have been successful are running bait, you know, whether they're dragon worms or minnows or leeches. Mm-hmm. They seem like they're being more productive, I guess, than the guys that are like pitching plastics or casting cranks or trolling. But that could change, you know, as the water temperature warms up, the bait start moving into all the bushes and brush, and those fish start transitioning to the back of the bays. The bite changes a lot in the 3 weeks from that last tournament.
Which it's kind of interesting the way that you know, obviously nature is nature, and they're going to do whatever they do. But then when it comes to, you know, what to do in a situation like that, you know, you kind of can get into last weekend, you know, worms were working great.
Right.
This weekend, they don't even like the look of my worms, you know?
Yeah, and it's, you know, again, you got to fish where the fish are at, right? So there's, you know, a lot of moving around. You know, you might have a favorite point that, you know, you always catch fish on, but it doesn't mean they're always going to be there. It's kind of like elk hunting, you know? I mean, you got a trail camera that maybe showed you that an elk was coming through an area for the last 5 days, and you go sit in there, and then all of a sudden, nothing.
Nothing.
Anyways, I'm just saying that the best thing to do is to, you know, not panic when you go to your favorite spot and there's not fish there. But, you know, there's a lot of traffic down there. There's a lot of people. You know, some of those areas have gotten more pressure than maybe they have in the past. And it's a good time to just go try something different. You know, every time you and I get on the boat, I'm like, you know what? I've never fished over here on this lake. I've fished this lake for 20 plus years, and I've never fished that wall. Let's go check it out. And we always tend to seem to catch fish.
Or at least see fish.
Yeah.
Maybe not catch them, but see them. You know, we saw that same scenario at the last Stampede where leaders on day one were on a point and whopped them. I mean, 30-pounder or 30 inches.
36 pounds, yeah.
I mean, that's just crazy. 36 pounds on the first day and then shut out the next day. Two fish.
Yeah, that, you know, again, I mean, that's kind of the, I guess that's the stress of, like, the, people put on themselves when they're tournament fishing. You're like, you have two ways of looking at tournament fishing. You can one say, hey, we're going to kick in a couple $100 to fish this tournament, and we're going to go enjoy ourselves and see how we can do versus the fish, right? But then there's other guys that are like, well, you know, I got to win. And they make it more of a job. And so, you know, and sometimes, like, those kids, you know, like, they were pretty confident that there was fish moving through that shoreline and going to be coming around that point. But by noon, they didn't have a fish. So then it was like, well, do we stay here and die on the point and hope that those fish do show up? Or do we assume that those fish have just moved on through and let's go find where they went? And that's what they ended up doing, maybe a little bit too late in the game. Mm-hmm. But they did, you know, get a couple of fish and ended up taking a third place. And then, you know, the guys that won it just had real consistent weights both days. I think, you know, pretty close to 19, 20 pounds both days. And when you're out for fun, you know, you're just like, hey, we're just going to do what we do, troll and catch three or four fish. That's great. But the tournament stuff, you know, you got to be willing to move. You got to be able to change tactics. You got to be able to kind of identify water temperatures, the clarity, maybe the fishing pressure, really kind of start digging and analyzing, you know, what's the bait doing right now? Is the water level coming up? Is the water level coming down? And you got to put you tend to put a little more and maybe sometimes even too much thought into it.
So when the winners, Lee and Anthony, I was talking with them afterwards, and I asked Lee what his secret was, and he says, don't fish there. He said, I don't go to the place where I know where, like, it's been good for me in the past. I mean, that's putting a lot of marbles in your basket. But
that eliminates a whole lot of water if you can't fish where you've already been fishing.
Which, you know, it's fun to hear the mentality and the thought process for a lot of people. But have you heard much about river fishing lately?
You know, I haven't talked to a whole lot of guys on the river. It sounds like it's been busy for sure. And it sounds like the fishing's been okay. Water levels on the river look pretty good. They're up pretty well. So all that tends to play a good part in it. Again, a lot of traffic on the river right now. So this is the time of year where we might see 60, 70, 80 boats, you know, going up and down. So it can be frustrating, but at the same time, everybody's there because the fishing's good.
Right. Well, and even not fishing, you know, we're about to the time when people are going to start floating the river, and that's just added traffic and added stress. And
we need another month before, you know, that happens. It's still awfully chilly out.
Yeah, that's true. It is true. But we get 80 degrees for a couple of days in a row, and people get the hankering, you know.
Yeah, you get a little sunshine. You know, that weekend of our tournament, like upper 80s, that's going to get some people, you know, pretty interested.
Yeah. Well, and there were already people adventuring on Glendo because they was hot.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, obviously if you're getting out this weekend or this week or next week, or you got a fishing trip planned for this summer, make sure to stop in here to Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where you can get everything you need before you go.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Welcome back to the show. And boy, if you're looking for something to do June 6th, 7th, and 8th, you can check out the Central Wyoming Machine Gun and Cannon Shoot. It's happening at the Garrett Ranch on 487 between Medicine Bow and 220, right there before you get to Alcova, and, you know, just south of Casper. Last year I got to go out and ride around the course and check out all the explosions and the explosives and how they set it up. And Quentin Miller is with us, and Quentin is running this puppy and has been for the last few years, and it's going to be a great time, and it goes to benefit HD Outdoors. So it really is a cool event, and it's cheap to go. You want to find out more about it, you can go check out cwmgshoot.com. Quentin, it's going to be another big show.
Yes, sir. We have a full line this year. I think we have 80 shooting positions, and the whole line is full this year, including some extra heavy artillery that we're bringing in. We've got a 90 millimeter anti-tank gun from World War II, and there's I think it's a T-124 76 millimeter anti-tank gun that's coming this year that we've never had before. That ought to be fun. And a couple PAC 75 millimeter, I think they want to call them mountain howitzers, but and then I think there's some Civil War cannons coming too, some old black powder stuff. So
that's yeah. Incredible. The lineup gets bigger and bigger every year. And last year, I mean, it's just incredible to see the firepower that's on the line there, but also the fact that, you know, if you've never shot a machine gun, this is an opportunity for you to get behind the stock and shoot.
Yep, we've got Texas Tactical Academy out of Texas down there, Scott Yerk and them guys come up, and they have just about every machine gun you'd ever want to shoot that they have for rent. And then Denver Bullets comes up out of Colorado Springs and does some renting as well. We've got a few other smaller vendors this year that are coming for the first time. I think LT Arms is their name. I'm not too familiar with those guys, but I've talked to them on the phone a few times already, and they seem like they've got a good idea what they're getting into. So we've got everything from M134 minigun, Ma Deuce 50 cals, and everything in between. There's bowling ball mortars that people bring that launch a bowling ball, you know, I don't know, 1,000 foot in the air and 1,000 yards downrange. It's pretty impressive to watch some of that stuff.
When I was out there last year, we jumped in a buggy and headed out and was doing a setup, because after a while, the big explosive things are you know, spent, so you got to set some more up. And it's quite the operation that you have. And how long do you start in advance building up the things that you need there on the grounds?
So we usually go out the week before the shoot, and we're out there all week setting up the line, you know, marking the positions and running the wires for all of our loudspeakers. And then it takes us about 2.5 days to get everything set in the field. And we do a lot of prep work, I guess, to kind of conceal some of that stuff that you got to see last year. Makes it funner for the shooters. They kind of got to look for it and find it out there in the field. And then some of the stuff we remote detonate at night, obviously, because the shooters can't see it. So we have a system that we use that we can do that safely and put on a good show for everybody. Saturday night's always the funnest for me, because we get to do the Mad Minute. And if everybody opens up with tracer fire and we have the big fireballs and all that stuff in the dark.
Well, so. I'll tell you, it's a great event. It's the 28th, so it's been going on for a long time, June 6th, 7th, and 8th. And this is a benefit for HD Outdoors, so another way to give back to the veterans. And I know last year they were really appreciative of all the things that went on there. And you guys offer weekend passes and camping passes.
Yep. It's $20 per person to get in. I believe kids under 12 are free through the gate, but they have to have a parent with them to sign for them on the liability waiver. And it's $40 for your camper for the weekend. So if you want to bring your camper out there, it's dry camping. We don't have any hookups or water or power or anything, but you're welcome to bring your camper out and hang out with everybody. At night after the shoot's done, you know, all the shooters are sitting around the campfires and shooting the, you know, telling their stories and stuff. And it's a great time to get to know some of these guys, because a lot of the shooters are veterans themselves, and to hear some of their stories and their experiences that they had when they were in the service is you just sit there mesmerized, you know, listening to this stuff, because it's just, some of it's really off the wall and cool to hear some of the stories. So,
and I know that there are a lot of guys or gals that maybe served and haven't touched a machine gun since they left service. So this would be a good time to kind of pick up that old firearm that maybe you lugged around for months or years over in the desert.
Yeah, I get them guys all the time. A couple years ago, I had a guy walk up to me and he had been looking at my M249 saw I had sitting on the mount. And he come up to me and he says, I was a saw gunner. And I said, oh, that's cool. And he says, can I look at your gun? And I said, yeah. And so he went over there and was checking it out. And then pretty soon he says, can I field strip this thing? And I just kind of laughed and I said, sure, why not? So he, you know, he disassembled that thing and checked it all out and put it all back together, and then I let him shoot it after he put it together, and he told me he hadn't touched one of them things in probably 15 years, and wow. He did it just like he had done it yesterday, you know. And that's part of what HD Outdoors likes doing is, you know, they do their recoil therapy stuff in the summertime where they get vets out and they go to the shooting range and let them shoot and stuff. And I think that gets them out of the house, some of them, you know, and really helps them out and keeps them active, I guess. So.
Well, even if you don't shoot, just the sheer adrenaline that goes through your body when you're just standing behind all of this going on, you can feel the thumps in your chest. It's so awesome.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's something to behold. I've been told it's probably the closest you'll ever get to combat without actually being in combat and being shot at.
If you're nervous about guns, or if you have a youngster that really is into guns, this is a great way to learn safety and learn all about it. And
yeah, it's most of the shooters are more than willing to, you know, answer any questions you have. They love talking about their guns, the history of them. We love having the kids shoot. I mean, I've had 4 and 5 year olds shoot some of my stuff, and most of the time they walk away with a big old grin on their face, just thinking that was the coolest thing. You know, some of the old guys get a little jealous when they see a little girl sitting up there shooting, and they're like, I want to do that what she just did, you know. Cause, but there's been so many neat experiences over the years with folks that come out and shoot with us and spectators and all that. It's just, I could talk for hours about all the different things that have happened and all positive. You know, we've never had an injury in the 28 years that I'm aware of, at least in the 8 years that I've been running it. We hold everybody to such a high standard because of what we're doing out there that there's no room for error. And I expect no less out of the guys. So, and they toe the line. So
it's awesome. And if you haven't ever even heard of it or ever been there, get out there and check it out. June 6th, 7th, and 8th. There is a website you can go get your tickets. It's cwmgshoot.com. Get your tickets, get all the information you need there, and kind of get an idea of what has happened over the last couple of years. There's pictures up there, and it brings back some great memories. And then the videos you got up there, too, are just absolutely phenomenal. So
I'd like to throw a little shout out to some of our supporters, Mosier Energy Systems. We've been with them guys for years, back when they were just Mosier Engine Service. Superior Signs, Frank and his crew up there are excellent at doing our signage and banners and stuff for us. And Blakeman Propane, those guys have been great. They supply our fuel for the generator and also some of our targets. I think this year they got 30 or 40 propane bottles they gave us, and we're going to shoot at those. And All Out Fire and Mills, I think they donated, I didn't count them, but there's got to be at least 250 fire extinguishers they gave us for targets. And Pepsi, they give us a pallet of water to keep everybody hydrated that's helping out during the shoot. Indian Ice. That Vigil with Vigil Trucking, he supplies the fuel for our pyrotechnic shenanigans. Oh, Alan over at Advanced Auto Parts, he supplies us with 5-gallon buckets and a bunch of PPE equipment for the blasting crew and our volunteers, gloves and, I don't know, WD-40 and brake clean, anything he can think of that we might be able to use out there, he gives us. So.
And you guys have help from the Barnum Fire Department, too. They're on site. Correct. Most of the weekend, right?
Yep. Dave Potter, he comes out and runs a fire crew with us. We love having them guys out there. They usually bring out their big military 5-ton brush truck, and it's on site the whole weekend, and they do our fire and EMS service. And luckily, the last probably 3 years, we haven't needed them for anything. It's been wet enough; we haven't started any fires. But if we do, they're there, and we sure appreciate them guys. So
that's awesome. And if you're wondering where this is, it's on the Garrett Ranch, which it's been there for, gosh, all 28 years, right?
No, it was out at Moss Deller's on the east end of the mountain when it first started years ago, and I can't remember when they moved it out to Garrett's. God, it was probably mid 2000, I don't know, 8, 9 maybe. So it's been out there for at least 10, almost 15 years. But yeah, Pete and Bev's guy and the family out there, they're so gracious with letting us do what we do. We love going out to the ranch. It's a beautiful piece of property, and we take care of it as best we can, clean it up afterwards, because they run cows out there year round. And matter of fact, there's cows out there right now, and they're pushing all my targets around that I got in there. So I went and put targets out, the big wood spools and stuff we use for targets, and them cows, they think they're play toys, so they're pushing them around out in the pasture. But yeah, we sure do appreciate the Garrett family for letting us do what we do, and hopefully they continue to let us do it for a long while. So,
well, I'll tell you that every year it amazes me of the stuff you guys put together, and I know you start planning all year long, and it all comes together on June 6th, 7th, and 8th. The Central Wyoming Machine Gun and Cannon Shoot. You don't want to miss out on this event. Again, go to the website, cwmgshoot.com, or you can find them on Facebook and follow along there at Central Wyoming Machine Gun and Cannon Shoot. Quentin, it's going to be another great year. I have a good feeling we're going to have good weather, and it's just going to be a fantastic time.
Yes, sir. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody this year. It's going to be fun.
I can't wait, and it's going to be a good time. Again, June 6th, 7th, and 8th, cwmgshoot.com. Get your tickets. Get them now. Get your spot for camping and spend the weekend out there at the Garrett Ranch. Thanks again for tuning in to Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. Remember, you can listen to all of our episodes on demand right inside the radio station's app.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.